Ladies man, but I'm unlucky now. For courting six girls all at once, they used me. My mother said it was naughty. Now she puts me in her bag. But I said if it's naughty, sure it's also very naughty.
And the lollipops is glove grabs done. The benches are clearing.
Dust Up with Hilly and Lolly is brought to you by Mr. Ned Custom Men's Suiting in New York City. Whether you're a professional athlete, celebrity, or just a couple of softball bums like us, if you're ready to ditch the old dusty suit and stop dressing like an animal, visit Mr. Ned, located at 137 Fifth Avenue, New York City, and tell Verm, Hilly and Lolly sing.
Welcome back, folks, to another episode of the Dust Up Debrief Sessions. And we're excited to announce, it's been out on social media, but we are excited to announce that after just how great the first two episodes went with this, we've been chatting and we are beyond excited to announce that Nick Shales is on board full time as a co-host. Shalesy, so excited to have you on board, buddy. Before we jump into the topic, just want to say welcome officially. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Boys, thanks for having me. This is it's going to be a good little trip down memory lane here. Can't wait to get into it.
That was a big signing for sure. And thank you for deferring some of that salary there too, like just like Shuhei did for us. So you're able to make it work.
Nice. Got to make sure you can afford those Miller Lights.
Well, that's it. Well, I would say over the course of however long this goes, there's going to be a few of those drank on these sessions. That's what it's designed to be, like we do in the hotel room going through this. And very excited tonight, boys, to have, like we put it out, we made him an offer he couldn't refuse. We got the Godfather himself back with us, Colin Abbott. I don't know if there's another ball player that we've mentioned more on the podcast than you. And we got you on here talking about an awesome topic tonight, taking the first pitch. We'll get to that. Welcome back to the podcast. It's an absolute pleasure, buddy.
Hey, fellas, glad to be here. What you guys are doing on and off the field, but as we're talking here tonight, and off the field, what you guys are doing with this podcast is fantastic. I mean, you're getting, even us older fellas are able to, to listen and watch and see what you guys are doing. And like I said, on and off the field, boys, all three of you guys has been fantastic.
No, we appreciate that, man. And I'm sure when Jason comes in every day to kind of suck up at work or ask for your help or ask for a raise, I think from what I've heard, this has come up, about the new format of these debrief sessions. So it's meant to be, a shorter episode where we're going to dial into a topic. The three of us were throwing around this topic specific to you, and we won't keep it as a secret. We got Wolfie coming on after you tonight to kind of bring the other side of the coin, if you want to put it that way. But taking the first pitch, you've heard us talk about you a lot on this, not just on the podcast, but just through our careers, picking your brain and, the impact that you've had on our career hitting-wise and a bunch of other players. But this topic in particular for you, you're known as one of the most professional hitters, but you're also known as a guy that took the first pitch religiously. So let's dive right into it. It is a debrief session. How did that come to be for you, taking the first pitch? And then we'll break it down as we go along.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was always trying to get, a read on a pitcher. And for me, you can look at a guy warming up and, that type of thing. But until you get in the batter's box, you really don't know. You're kind of trying to get a feel for a guy. All pitchers are different. I mean, some guys jump further, or some guys hold the ball above their head longer. Way back in the day, for all those old fellas, guys actually had a 2-foot drag. So you're trying to get a feel for a pitcher. And I always felt that if I could see the first pitch, certainly, but also get deep into the count, especially my first at bat. So if you can manage to go 2-2, 3-2, if you foul a pitch or two off, then you're seeing 5-6 pitches in your first at bat. If you could for me anyway, if you could do that, whether you get a hit your first at bat, if you did, that was great. But if you didn't, it set up your second and your third and your possibly your fourth at bats as well. So that was more for me, was a timing device, I guess, or a timing method. And it not only affected my first at bat, but also the, like I said, second, third, and fourth ones, because, you know, the more pitches you could see, the better your timing is, the better off you're going to be. I always felt that. I mean, we always talk about, you know, wanting to see the best pitchers more often, because as hitters, that should help us out. If you break that down even further, in a game or in a mid point of a game, now you've seen, you know, four, five, six pitches in your first at bat. Now all of a sudden in your second at bat, you know, you should have a read on a guy by then. And that was always my thought process. The more pitches I see, you know, I always had a pretty good eye anyway, but I mean, the more pitches that I would see, the better it would be for me and really for the team as well, because that's also the more pitches that they would see. You know, so I think it was a win-win for everybody involved, but it was more of a timing thing for me.
Yeah. And we always talk about hitting with a plan, or mm-hmm. going to the plate with a plan, especially at that level. Now I'd have to assume, especially, you know, once you start to get established and the pitchers, the top dogs started figuring you out a lot, mm-hmm. I would assume that you probably would have seen probably 90%, 95% strikes. Those pitchers were just rolling the dice that you were going to, the percentages say that you were going to take that pitch. Mm-hmm. So I guess part of your plan would be hitting down on one.
Yeah, I never had an issue hitting down in the count, two strikes. Right. I never really had a problem with that, mm-hmm. Especially if you're going good. If you're going good, to be honest, what the count was kind of irrelevant. You know, you have to be not afraid to hit 0-1, 0-2, 1-2, whatever it is. You know, if you're really defensive with two strikes, this type of a plan probably not going to work for you, because you are oftentimes giving up the first strike, which I didn't mind doing, but that's not for everybody. But that's, you know, I was a little more defensive with two strikes, but I mean, you guys all see me hit. It's not like I was, you know, trying to check swing the ball over the third baseman's head with two strikes either, right? So, right? I mean, it was just one of those things where it didn't, you know, 0-1, 0-2, it didn't really bother me.
Yeah, so being able to follow you for a lot of my career, watching you go into counts and the way you attacked them was amazing to me. Just your sheer coverage at the plate as well blew me away. But for me, the way you protected the plate was so impressive. Like, you had at least another 4 to 6 inches on both sides of the plate that you could get the barrel to. Like, was that involved with your taking the first pitch, or just the way that you saw the ball or your hands got into it?
Yeah, I think this, for me, once again, where the pitch was coming and the count I was in was kind of secondary to me. I always felt I could get to the outside corner or beyond. I could drop my hands down and get to the inside pitch as well. You know, I'm a bigger fella. I guess I got longer arms. You know, I stood way off the plate. So, I mean, I could get to the outside pitch, but still drop my hands to the inside as well. So whether that was up in the count or down in the count really didn't bother. I didn't really think that way. The other thing too is that as you get older and as you get more established, yeah, the pitcher is trying to throw a strike if they think I'm going to take it. Absolutely. Why wouldn't you? The other issue is that the umpire also knows that as well. So if the pitch is not right down the middle and it might be a couple of inches low, a couple of inches outside, the umpire is also likely not to give the pitcher that pitch. Okay. And that was my thought as well. People would always say to me, well, no one calls a strike against you. Like, well, you know, if I was in a really good mood, I'd say, well, if it was a strike, I would have swung at it. But if you know, that's also like, as you evolve when you're a younger hitter, that's probably not going to happen. But as you get older and you get experience, stuff like that, you also gain the fact that you take more pitches. It means that you see more pitches, which means you control the strike zone a little bit more. So all of those things are, and that's all a positive to me, obviously. I mean, you know, if I know that I'm probably going to, the close pitch is probably not going to get called a strike, especially with two strikes, you kind of need to have that in your back pocket, because, you know, you start extending the strike zone because you think the umpire might call it on you, then now you're further defensive and further away from getting hit.
So, Shalesy, that's where fucking Hilly gets it, right? That's where Hilly gets it, because his saying now, because he's the veteran, heavy, as you know, he's the Colin Abbott on the circuit now, right? And he looks at the umpires and said, my eyes are too goddamn good, he says, right? Shalesy, that's where he gets it, you know.
Well, listen, right? whether we believe it or not, if everybody else believes it, then, hey, you got a leg up, right? So
Yeah, but I want to throw this out to Hilly and Shalesy, because we come from, you know, okay, well, we come from Newfoundland, but you know, we've all probably gone through waves of being aggressive at the plate, right? And you've been, there's only a few players I've really seen with that discipline, that methodic approach to the plate. Matty Waugh is another guy who does it now. And then you have guys who do it so professionally that they can also use it to set pitchers up, right? But we're talking about Abby taking the first pitch. But Hilly, with you, you model a lot of your career around Abby, but you're also a very aggressive hitter. What's your take on Abby's approach to the first pitch and what it would take to stay that discipline, right? Because we get up there and we see one coming down the middle, like, oh, geez, we got to start hacking, right?
Yeah. I always did like to be aggressive, but sometimes you get in stretches where you're a little too aggressive, and then you're trying to first pitch, oh, this is going to be the best pitch of the at bat, and then you're trying to swing a little too hard and hit it a little too far. But you know, it certainly makes sense. The more pitches you see, especially early on in games against the flamethrowers, you know, the more comfy you're going to be in the box, the more the easier it's going to be to time this guy. But you know, I kind of go in stretches. Sometimes I always did like the first pitch from an early age, but you know, nowadays and you know, these pitchers are so goddamn good that seeing a couple pitches is not necessarily a bad idea, especially in the early innings, we'll say.
Right. Shales, your approach on, you know, whether it's first pitch or not, what's your take on that whole thing when you get in? Is it situational or is it just how you're feeling?
Oh, it definitely comes down to situational. Try and pick what the catch is trying to set you up with. Like if they're trying to go away, or like I usually look for quarters of the plate. If it's something I can handle, I'll go after it. But most of the time, I'll try and work my way into a count, and then and try and use his best assets against him. But no, it's be aggressive if it's there. If it's not, take it.
And I mean, yeah, and being aggressive in the strike zone is not the worst thing in the world to do. I mean, I'd stand up every now and again. You take a drop ball mid thigh high down the middle, and you take it for a strike, and you step out and go, Jesus, what'd I do that for? Right? You know, yeah. Those things happen to all of us. The one thing that used to drive me totally insane was if I did switch it up, and if I did swing at the first pitch, and then you pop it up to the second baseman. Now in my mind, first of all, you're out, which obviously you're 0-for-1. But now you haven't really set yourself up for your second or your third or your fourth at bat. So now your second at bat, now you're trying to rein it back and go, okay, now I've got to do in my second at bat what I should have done in my first at bat, at least in my mind and my approach. So, you know, aggressive is good. And you do have to switch it up every now and again. You can't just take the first pitch every single at bat. I never did that either. Yeah, right. You have to, you know, every now and again, you have to step up and swing at the first pitch. Now, it always helped if you had a pick on a guy and you kind of went, okay, he's going to throw you a first pitch drop ball. And you're thinking, okay, I'm going to switch this up here now. And, you know, you get the drop ball, you know, mid thigh high. But once again, that's great if you get a hit. And if you get a hit, great. I mean, no one cares what the count is if you get a base hit. The problem for me was if I never got the base hit, because that would drive me totally insane, and I felt like I would be screwing up my own approach.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, there got to be situations where, okay, you know, you're in the third and fourth at bat, say your fourth at bat of a game, and you've taken the first pitch three times in a row, and this same pitcher's in, you say, okay, he's throwing me a strike, and I'm just gonna tee off on one here.
Absolutely, and you know, you got to play the game that way as well. You just can't have the same rhythm you know, you have four at-bats in one game on a Friday night, and you face the guy again on Sunday afternoon. And he's like, oh, okay, well, I mean, we just did this two nights ago. You know, I'm not going to let him necessarily dictate everything that goes on in every at-bat. But the flip side of that was I felt I was dictating what was going on in my at-bats, not him. Right? That was how I felt. Now, you can, you know, there's always, you know, the aggressive side or the not aggressive side, but I was the guy that wanted to dictate my at-bats, not anybody else. Didn't always work out that way, certainly, but if I was dictating my at-bats, I felt I had a better chance of getting a base hit. And part of that, of course, was, as we're talking about tonight, is taking the first pitch, which usually led into longer at-bats, which, you know, usually led into more productive ABs the second, third, fourth time around.
Yeah, I with your aggressiveness comes a lot of picking pitches and getting to know pitches as well, right? Just noticing from your approach was a lot of times if you missed a certain pitch in one of your early at-bats, you knew it was coming in one of the later at-bats. It was one of the things I definitely admired about you in my career, for sure. But was there any sort of approach to that, like mentally at the start of the game, knowing that if you missed that early pitch, knowing that they were going to come back with it later in the game and you weren't going to miss it?
That really never – I felt I could hit all three, the rise ball, drop ball, change up. I know there's curveballs, yep, and all those things. Most times when I came through, it was the up, down, and change, right? So I never had an issue, at least in my own mind, with guys that I couldn't hit a pitch. So if I did miss it early on, there was a better chance that I was going to hit it in my second or third or fourth at bat, because you have seen it before. You may have missed that particular pitch. You foul it off or you swing and miss. But that's not the only time you would have seen it. If I had four or five pitches in my first at bat, pretty good chance I was seeing every one of them. I was seeing an up, down, and a change up. So that approach also, even if you didn't get a hit, that approach led you to see more pitches, which once again, later on in the game, now he's not coming at you with anything you haven't seen, right? Yeah. You know, my approach was, if you step up in your first at bat and you pop up a rise ball, you've only seen one pitch, right? Yeah. You've only seen one pitch. Now, if you hit that pitch over the fence, who cares? It didn't really matter. But if you don't hit it over the fence, then what's your approach the next step at? And that was always, it wasn't just every time I got up to the plate, it was, okay, what do I do in my first at bat? How do I approach things differently in my second at bat if I needed to, right?
Yeah,
because there's always that ebb and flow of, if you get a base hit the first time up, your pitcher's not going to come back with the same, you know, the same approach or the same pitch necessarily in your second at bat. So, you know, it was all part of the plan going in. And then you just adjusted as time, you know, as the game went on.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing here, which I think it's great advice for any young hitter coming up or any intermediate or senior hitter right now that's trying to get better. The takeaway really is, you're working yourself into account. You're seeing more pitches. And Abby, you traditionally you've hit in the four spot, right? So you're also getting to see whatever pitches are being thrown to the batters before you, right? And then you get in, because how many times, Hilly, Shalesy, have we gone in? I know there's been more than two handfuls of games where I've seen three pitches and gone out 0-3. There's been games where you see three pitches and go 3-3. But you're not able to take away as much information. And this seems more of a game plan than it is, you know, a reaction and seeing and hitting the ball. And Hilly, we talk about with these debrief sessions, wanting them to be informative, wanting them to be able to have some takeaways for people who maybe listen that are playing the game. But, you know, that approach of getting deep into a count and seeing those pitches, how important is that for any young hitter coming up?
And it all circles back to one thing, hitting with a plan. And we teach it right now to our kids, you know, stepping up to the plate. Your at-bat starts in the on-deck circle, maybe even before that. You just got to have a plan. If you go up there and say, yeah, I'm just going to go through the motions, try to hit the ball as hard as I can, or try to get a base hit, chances are it's probably not going to work out, especially when you progress through the levels and you're facing the top pitchers, you know, at the top level, night in, night out. You got to have a plan. you know, of course, and that plan, like Colin said, the plan's going to change in certain situations. And sometimes you might try something and it might not work. And then all of a sudden you got to adjust on the fly in the middle of a game. But coming back to a plan, you know, the numbers say you're going to have more success at the plate.
And guys, too, if it even starts before your game starts, it's, you know, before you get to the deck circle, I tell all young kids now when I'm speaking to them, if you're at a tournament, okay, you know, don't have your face into your phone out just outside the fence. Sit and watch. Watch the guy warm up. Watch the game ahead of you. Watch the game behind you. Like, you're going to see that pitcher probably at some point in your career, or certainly maybe even that tournament. So why aren't you watching him when he warms up in the game after you, right? I mean, how many times did I would stand behind home plate and get a pick on a pitcher in a game I wasn't even playing in? So now all of a sudden, now I got a further leg up. You talk about the approach and everything, and that's all fine, but it was even before the game even started. You knew, okay, hang on now, when this guy does this with his glove, it's probably going to be a Rosball. So before your game even starts, you know that. So now you're planning even further ahead. And I think that, you know, in our world now, everybody's got their face in their phone all the time, you know, or you're running to run to the beer tent to have a beer after a game. Listen, we all spend time at a beer tent, but, you know, after a game. Fine. But instead of running there right after the game, watch an inning of the game after. All right. You know, make sure your coach says, well, listen, why don't we stay and watch a couple innings? Because we might be facing this guy later on in the tournament. You know, you don't have to stay and watch all seven innings, but watch him warm up, maybe throw an inning, and then go to the beer tent to have a beer. You might just have to drink your first one a little faster. That's all. You know, we've all done that. We've all done that too, right?
You're freaking right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But did you? But, you know, did you ever have me picked? Probably not, hey?
I already didn't need to pick you, Jason, so it didn't really matter, right?
Yeah. But, Abby, this is why we want to talk to you about this subject. And Shalesy, we all have a game plan in our mind when we go into a game, but sometimes part of that game plan is if he comes at me with the first pitch, I'm going to hack at it, right? But, Shalesy, you've been notorious, I guess maybe the word for setting pitchers up over your career. And Abby, I want to come back to you with the same question from this, but having that game plan, getting deep into account, but using it and that information for your second, your third, or even if you get into extra innings, you might get a fourth or a fifth at bat, using that information to then set up a pitcher. Shields, that's something that's been a part of your game as well. Maybe touch on that. And then Abby, when he's done, if you can chime in to maybe some situations where you're able to use that information in your career to set up a pitcher for a particular pitcher or what.
Yeah, that was half the reason I asked Abby about the one before. For me, I know if a pitcher seems to get ahead on a certain pitch, or I swing under, say, a low rise ball or something, and I don't look that comfortable with it early in the game, I know for a fact they're going to come back with it later on in the game. So just trying to figure out where I am in my at-bats and what pitches they are throwing sort of sets me up a little bit better later in the game with my later at-bats, because I have a fair idea of where they want to go to get a ball by me, rather than trying to get me to chase or anything like that. So usually I can start to set them up in the earlier at-bats, but it's definitely not something that I go into the at-bat like thinking I'm going to set them up, but it just eventuates that way and unravels itself as the game goes on. But just got to be smart enough to pick your spots and make sure you take advantage of it.
Yeah, and Abby, on your end, if you get deep in the count on your first at bat, let's say it was a very successful first at bat, you took a ball, maybe you took another strike, got your timing down, mm-hmm. and then got a hit or hit a home run. What are you taking into your later at bats from a very successful first at bat?
I mean, your likelihood of, especially if you hit a home run, you know, your next at bat's probably not going to, the guy's just not going to keep feeding you the same pitch that you just hit out of the park, obviously. That's, you know, so your adjustment mid game, even mid at bat, as Shalesy just said, you know, because you don't really know, unless you get a strong pick on a guy early, you don't really know what's coming. one thing I will say is that most pitchers try to get you out with their best pitch, right? Whatever they feel their best pitch is or their out pitch is, especially with two strikes, that's the one they're probably going to throw. That goes back to, you know, having longer at-bats and seeing what, especially with two strikes. You get the two strikes, they're going to try to get you out with their best pitch usually, right? So that may or may not be your best pitch to hit, but it's their best pitch to throw. So why wouldn't they, right? I mean, they're going to try to, you know, they're more confident in their best pitch. So their best pitch is likely what they're going to try to throw to get you out. Now, once again, there's all kinds of adjustments that need to be made there, because if you hit their best pitch over the fence, okay, well, now we got an adjustment that needs to be made. But being able to hit all three pitches, I say three pitches, I guess I'll take the curveball, the foolish left-handed curveball, take that out of the equation right now. But if you're able to hit all three pitches and you've had two, three at-bats, by the time you get there, there should be no surprises to you. It's not like, oh my God, I can't believe he threw that pitch. Well, you've over three at-bats, you've probably seen 12 or 15 pitches. So should be no surprises by then what's coming, right? But you adjust mid at-bat, as Shelsey said. And if you have missed a pitch, there's probably a good chance you're going to get it again. You just, like I said, you just have to, it's kind of an ebb and flow as to feel as to what might be coming. But to me, the pitcher is going to try to get you out with his best pitch, whatever that is.
What was your thought process, sticking with pitches, what was your thought process behind the change, dealing with the change? And you know, you're facing a guy who got all three pitches, but he also, I'll use Todd Martin, for example, up really good, up really, really good down, really good changeup. So what was going through your head, you know, and keeping that in your mind throughout your at-bat?
I never really kept it in my mind about the changeup, to be honest. I think I kept my hands and my body weight back enough that you can adjust to the changeup. Okay. You know, because if you got it, you know, if you got that in your mind, that's tough. Now you got, I mean, he's going to throw a Rosball, he's going to throw a drop ball, it's going to be inside, it's going to be outside. Then all of a sudden he's breaking off a nasty changeup. I never really had a problem with the changeup, to be honest. I think my hand stayed back, even if my front side went a little bit ahead. If your hand stayed back enough, you know, you may not hit a home run, but you got a good chance of hitting that ball hard. You know, your hands go forward with your body weight and then you're done. But I never really, to be honest with you, never really had an issue with the changeup. I think I kept my hands back. You know, I was quick enough through the zone that my hands being back stayed back. And then the changeup, I just really adjusted to that.
Yeah, same for me. No issue. I was just asking just to see.
Here we go. Yeah. Now, boys, so this is what I'm learning through these debrief sessions, aside from a lot of really high-level softball knowledge, is how quickly 25 minutes can go by, right? And like these are 1.5, 2, 3, 4, 5 beer debrief sessions, depending on how thirsty you are, right? But we do want to stay true to the format. But Abby, you know, how many people get to sit down and talk to you about hitting? So we're not just going to force it out the door because of that. There's a couple of quick things I do want to touch on and get your take. It's really when you do decide to pull the trigger, right? You're in this count. You maybe you let it go. You got your timing. We're three. Well, you know, I guess this will probably be the third episode of debriefs to come out. We've talked about you and the shift for the last two episodes, right, Shelsey? Like we've been talking about Abby and the shift on here. Does that even play a part in your game plan, knowing that the defense, the whole infield is moving because you stepped into the batter's box? Does that come into play? Does it come into play with taking the first pitch or not? And how has the shift become incorporated into your hitting game plan?
Never really did, to be honest. First of all, you're trying to hit it over people, which means you're trying to hit it over the fence, right? Which means they can shift you wherever they want. If the ball goes over the fence, unless they get go gadget arms, they're not going to get it, right? But I always had for me, it was you can hit it over them or you can hit it through them. I didn't mind either one.
Everything about that.
Right? I didn't mind either one. Now, did some people make outs Do I make outs because of the shift? Sure. Right. But that really didn't change my game plan, because I can hit the ball. If I didn't hit it over the fence, if I squared it up, it was coming at you pretty good. So if you made the play after that, then hey, I'll tip my hat to you and I'll go sit down again. I have no issue with that. But it really didn't change my game plan. You know, me hitting, three hop ground balls where the shortstop is supposed to be wasn't really my strong suit. Right.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And that was, it was hitting the ball hard. It was doing that side of it. And then, I didn't really care. You can play me wherever you want us.
Yeah, that's awesome. Shalesy, Colin Abbott here, one of the best to ever do it, talking about hitting. We do want to wrap it up, let people listen to this on the drive. Abby, I personally got about 8 or 9 other topics I want to get you back on talking about. Really hope you'll come back and do it. But Shalesy, one of the best to do it. What do you think?
Mate, that was awesome. I got to have a good chat with you in the beer tent there in Newfoundland. It was good to catch up after a lot of years, but it's definitely good to actually chat about your hitting strategies, especially when you were saying once you got older, there were certain bits and pieces. I definitely took a lot of that in. Might need to use that this year. But it was awesome chatting with you again, mate. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, anytime, fellas. This is great. And Lolly, listen, if you wanted me to come on and we talk about my defensive abilities in right field, hey, we can talk about that all night as well, right?
We got that lined up for you. You and Grazer for defensive clinic coming up here in New York.
Actually, I could talk for 25 minutes about Grazer's defense that I saw. Right, that'd be easy to do.
Yeah. We've seen a couple of those videos online.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yes.
Yeah. No, this is awesome. I think this was one of the goals of doing these debriefs, right? Is to provide good substance, like you said, educational stuff, especially if a young player wants to tune in. I think you're getting some really good stuff here and some really good value.
I think it's great, fellas. What you guys are doing is awesome. I mean, you do the career stuff and, we did this, we did that, and we had this, we did this, had fun here, and that's all good. It's all great, actually. But I mean, this stuff can actually, if a kid goes, oh, hang on now, maybe I could take the first pitch or let me try this. Nick Schell, this is how I set up a hitter. Jason Hill, Steve Lott, this is how I do it. That's how I think we incorporate our careers into somebody else, is to say, why don't we do this? Why don't we try this? And to do stuff like this, I mean, having Wolfie on next is awesome. Because, I mean, I'm sure Wolfie steps up to the plate and got a totally different approach than I would have. Right. And, listen, the guy's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the best players ever. Obviously, it worked. Right. So doing this, I think, is great for the younger kids to come up and learn different approaches. And, hey, whatever works for them is fine, whatever it is. Right.
Yeah, that's the goal. But, we're lucky to get the quality of ball players such as yourself to come on and share that. Thank you again for taking the time to do it. And there you have it, folks. It's another episode of a debrief session. Thanks for hanging out with us. And we got Lucas and Nick here, a little bit of Rum Ragged to take us out.
get out of here!
I told you, Mr. Drama.
I used to be a ladies' man, but I'm a man now. For courting 6 girls all at once, they
say bye-bye, baby.
Mother said it was naughty,
oh,
but I said if it's naughty, sure it's all so bad.